Live from Burbank, California, and it's 17 square miles of stretch marks. It's the Mark Maron Show. And now, his pores are enormous. Mark Maron.
They're all singing, Jim. My pores are singing. Good evening, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, and of course you lurking conservatives. How are you? May everything that you believe in bless you today, whatever that may be. May it bless you today. How's that? I hope you had a nice weekend. We have a great show for you planned. We have a nice show planned. Later in the show, we're going to have Saul Williams, hip-hop poet laureate. He's going to be here with his book, The Lost MC Scrolls. He's a very impressive character, Saul. He's a great poet, a great performer, and this new book has a very interesting device in it that I think will be provocative and great for conversation, and hopefully he will read some of his poetry, or not read it, recite it, memorized. Whatever it is that he does, I hope that he does it. I'd like him to do that on my show, if that would be okay with him. Congressional candidate Marcy Winograd will be here to talk about politics and her run against Democratic incumbent Jane Harman in California's 36th district. It's a big district. It's a coastal district. But more importantly, she's running against a Democratic congresswoman who's pretty well entrenched and also very pro-war. And this is a great, it's a great indication of where the Democrats are beginning to be willing to go. I watched Howard Dean speak to the DNC down in New Orleans, and there was a great momentum about certainly taking the lead in the political conversation around national security, around courage, around being able to finally talk about the war. Now, granted, many of them should have done it earlier, obviously. Not everybody is Russ Feingold. Clearly, he seems to be the only one, really, and a couple congresswomen and congressmen who were willing to come out against the war when it first started happening. But now it seems that it's going to be a major platform of the Democratic fight towards the House and towards the presidency, as we see with John Kerry speaking at Faneuil Hall last Saturday. That was a pretty amazing thing. 35 years to the day in 1971 when John Kerry testified before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee as someone who was 4 months out of Vietnam, a soldier, speaking out against what the Americans were doing to civilians in Vietnam. He stood behind it, and he stood behind dissent and the power of dissent in the world that we live in today and the necessity of dissent. We'll get into that a little bit. Marcy Winograd also was the president of the Progressive Democrats of Los Angeles. So she is very well defined in what she has to say about just about every topic in terms of how progressive Democrats should handle it. I'm looking forward to talking to her. If you go to her website, it's a really good website. I don't know why it stuck out in my head, but it was easy to navigate. And she had all the list of issues and bang, 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 bang. Here are the opinions. Here are the opinions on environmentalism, on the war, on women's issues, on the economy. It was very clear and they were succinct and there was no waffling about it. This is what Democrats have to do now. And I think Howard Dean was talking about that as well. Everybody's starting to talk a pretty good game. Even old Ted Kennedy on Meet the Press the other day seemed pretty, they're pretty confident. We can't, I don't necessarily need to say we, but the Democrats really shouldn't drop this ball. I mean, they couldn't have it more in their lap to just take it and let's get, we could even get the Senate back, for God's sakes. A lot happened in the world today, and we want to make sure you're up to speed and informed. So here's tonight's edition of the Mark Maron Show's Short Order News. His voice sounding strong and combative, Osama bin Laden released another audio tape calling for the creators of cartoons mocking Mohammed to be turned over to Al-Qaeda for punishment. Bin Laden also issued a fatwa against cartoonist Alex Graham for making Fred Bassett that lazy and yet so irresistibly cute. A multi-state outbreak of mumps across the Midwest is showing no sign of letting up, folks. Experts say the first symptoms are having a puffy face and large jowls, which makes it difficult to spot in the Midwest. The mumps. A controversial television seance that aired today claimed it reached the spirit of John Lennon, but viewers had to pay $9.95 to find out what the Beatle had to say. Some insiders say the late Beatle told them, quote, "The press should be not only a collective propagandist and a collective agitator, but also a collective organizer of the masses," end quote. Others say they contacted the wrong Lennon. And that's the short order news for today. The wrong Lennon. That would be the wrong Lennon. It's interesting that that is a communist talking point, a communist idea, and it is something that has been so thoroughly engaged by the Bush administration and the cronies that are in power here. It's amazing how much they took from totalitarian philosophy to wrangle and manage the ideology that they keep trying to impose on the American people, which is starting to break down in very big ways. I think Bush's approval rating is in the low 30s. It ranges, but even at the top end of any curve of polls, it's still only in the mid-30s, which I think is phenomenal. And a lot of it has to do with dissent, with the inevitability of dissent. And I was reading the text to John Kerry's speech from it. He spoke at Faneuil Hall in Boston, outdoors, 35th anniversary, to the day that he spoke to the Foreign Relations Committee. And if I could quote a couple of things from here, he says, quote, "I have come here today to reaffirm that it was right to dissent in 1971 from a war that was wrong, and to affirm that it is both a right and an obligation for Americans today to disagree with a president who is wrong, a policy that is wrong, and a war in Iraq that weakens the nation." He goes on to say, "The best way to support the troops is to oppose a course that squanders their lives, dishonors their sacrifice, and deserves our people and our principles, When brave patriots suffer and die on the altar of stubborn pride because of the incompetence and self-deception of mere politicians, then the only patriotic choice is to reclaim the moral authority misused by those entrusted with high office." End quote. That's John Kerry on Saturday, me quoting John Kerry. Obviously, that wasn't a segment from the speech, or it wouldn't have sounded like me just sitting here saying it, would it?
I thought it was him.
It's weird how good I am at that.
You sounded just like him.
I have come here today to reaffirm...
It sounds like FDR now.
Yeah, well, you know, they all kind of blend, FDR, JFK. But John Kerry, I think, owning and continuing to own, as he did for the most part during his campaign, you know, what he did in 1971, I think it's important that somebody of his stature is starting to speak this specifically about Americans' right to disagree with this administration, and that it should happen on a day-to-day basis. I got to tell you, the more I think about it, I can't even imagine one point one issue that a conservative could say that they support this president on. It seems to me that the debate between conservatives and non-conservatives, I'm not even going to say liberal anymore, I'm not going to say Democrats, I'm going to say people who disagree with the president for the right reasons, that may even be Republicans and independents, there is no argument pro this administration anymore. There just isn't. There's nothing they can stand on. They can't stand on the war. That, I mean, I was watching, 60 Minutes last night, and they had a retired CIA officer on, Tyler Drumheller, who basically said that, you know, what's been said a million times before, that the intelligence, it was not the intelligence community's fault that we were led into war. They did not do it. It was not a breakdown of intelligence. It was specifically that this administration had made a decision to go into Iraq and was going to choose the intelligence that fit that agenda, period. And this is a guy that was on the inside. And Tenet took the fall for that. All right, but I don't know how clear this stuff has to be. You listen to Air America on any given day, and you'll hear many of these talking points, ad infinitum, over and over again. And I think that's important, but a lot of times I think there's a lot of preaching to the choir going on, and I don't know how we get out and start talking to conservatives about this, but very few people I know. Do you know anybody, honestly, Jim, that, you know, in your circle where you actually talk about politics? Like just friends?
In my circle? Actually, yeah.
You do?
I have people who are acquaintances who are from Texas, and they feel kind of embarrassed and ashamed about what's going on there and what came out of there. And they talk about it. And
could you imagine that, the embarrassment of somebody who voted for this president, the embarrassment of somebody who thought that who bought the Kool-Aid, who drank the Kool-Aid on the war?
I know a few people who did in my family, did vote for him, and their explanation is now, their rationalization is that Kerry was terrible, that's the best you could pick? And that's what I heard all last Christmas.
Well, it's interesting how I think anyone's mind, there's a certain type of person, and I think most people are like that, that will seek to blame before they seek to own their own mistake or actually have a conversation about why they made the choices they made. There's always this reaction, and I think it happens in not just in politics, social events. Nobody wants to take responsibility for anything right away. You kind of want to see if you can get away with it, and then maybe take responsibility for it or commit to whatever lie that you want to put out there as a reason for why you committed to that choice in the first place. But, I mean, Kerry now, it's clear that he's running for president again. There's no doubt about that. He went on to say in his speech, he did a sort of interesting thing, which makes me really wish that we had sound of it or that I was at least present. You know, he started indicting the Bush-Cheney doctrine. Now, to say that Bush and Cheney had a doctrine, in retrospect, you know, there is no, the neocon agenda and the Bush doctrine was very convoluted because he was too busy lying to the people, trying to accommodate them in a way that would placate their fears, that there was really no truth in it. But in retrospect, given their record, you can now see a series of events and circumstances that happened, and John Kerry, you know, kind of picked that out as the Bush-Cheney doctrine, and I'll read you those talking points in just a second. So why don't you stay here, stay with us. You're listening to the Mark Maron Show. You can go to markmaron.com and blog away with the folks. We got funny coming up. We got great guests today, so stay with us.
And now, come in for a free stress test. Mark Maron.
Yeah, I'll give it to you. Just grab hold of my hands. And I'll see, you know, I'll see if you freak out. That's my stress test. You take both of my hands, Jim, and you hold them.
Yeah.
And then I just look at you.
That's not.
And if you start to freak out a little bit, you've got to.
That's a stress guarantee.
Yeah, you got to fortify your boundaries a little bit. You're not so unstressed yourself, though. I'm not going to take
that. No, I got a lot of stress.
I know
you do. It's a very stressful world. Stressful neighborhood, stressful occupation. Everything's stressful.
You got a stressful neighborhood, do you? Angelino Heights?
Yeah, you know, it's right in the transitional period where, you know, you walk out and go, this is great. I think I'll take a walk. And then somebody tags your ass.
Yeah. My neighborhood is much the same. There was a period there when I first moved in where my home, was getting tagged fairly regularly by someone named Chico, I think. I couldn't, you know, the tag, I learned from
Chico, actually, that guy?
He's that guy. A lot of times it's just kids, they see a free wall, you know, and I didn't really know what it means, but I thought that, does this mean that it's no longer my house, it's Chico's house? How does this work? I've been tagged, I know it's territorial, but how far does that go? Do I need to do, is there paperwork I need to sign? So eventually you end up spray painting over it, but I learned something about graffiti from reading Saul Williams' book.
Yeah.
Very interesting about hip-hop and how little I know about it and how much distance I have. I've tried to engage with hip-hop, I've listened to hip-hop, I just don't, you know, it turns out that I'm more of a music guy than I am a words guy most of the time. It's just, that's just a reality. And I've had this recent experience with hip hop where I'm completely reinterested in knowing more about it and listening to quality hip hop because I got that record, Voices from the, oh man, the guy's going to be on the show. What is the name of that? It's a CD, Voices from Iraq or Voices from the Front. I can't remember. I'll tell you in a second, but he's going to be on the show later this week. This is a bunch of soldiers from Iraq, who recorded hip hop, beautifully produced hip hop songs and rap songs, and I got to be honest with you, I was listening to it because I'm going to be talking to the guy that created it this week, and there was a couple of songs and stories that were being told on these hip hop tunes, and it choked me up, man. It really choked me up, like literally, I had emotional response to the honesty, and if I can find more of that, I will certainly pay attention. Well, here's what John Kerry called the Bush-Cheney doctrine. According to the Bush-Cheney doctrine, this is John Kerry. According to the Bush-Cheney, you can tell me in my head if you want, Bill. You can just tell me in my head. I'm used to that. Voices from the Front Line is the name of that CD. Did that just come out in my head, or did everyone hear you do that? Just in my head? Okay, so there you go.
Voices from the Front Line, Mark. This is your other face.
Is everyone hearing that? Because I'm getting nervous. I might have a tumor. All right, so let's hear what John Kerry said about voices from the front line. John Kerry was a voice from the front line. That is exactly what he did in 1971 in front of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, 4 months out of Vietnam, talking about the atrocities being committed by the United States of America in the name of the people of the United States. That is exactly the quality of honesty you get from that. Voices from the front line, though they were not, these were not dissenting voices. These were just voices talking about their struggle in being a soldier and having to be a soldier and what they have to deal with. But this is John Kerry, his definition of what the Bush-Cheney doctrine stands for. Quote, according to the Bush-Cheney doctrine, alliances and international institutions are now disposable, and international institutions are dispensable or even despicable. According to the Bush-Cheney doctrine, we cannot forswear the fool's gold of information secured by torturing prisoners or creating a shadow justice system with no rules and no transparency. According to the Bush-Cheney doctrine, unwarranted secrecy and illegal spying are now absolute imperatives of our national security. According to the Bush-Cheney doctrine, those who question the abuse of power question America itself. According to the Bush-Cheney doctrine, an administration should be willing to spend hundreds of billions of dollars on the Iraq war, but unwilling to spend a few billion dollars to secure the American ports through which nuclear materials could make their way to terrorist cells. According to the Bush-Cheney doctrine, executive powers trump the constitutional doctrine of separation of powers. According to the Bush-Cheney doctrine, smearing administration critics is not only permissible, but necessary, and revealing the identity of a CIA agent is an acceptable means to hide the truth. This is, you know, like I said, this is talked about a lot, but the fact that John Kerry is saying it publicly with a certain amount of steam, one, indicates that he's definitely running for president again, and two, indicates that there are politicians willing to speak out against this war. We can criticize them all we want, but as long as they start doing it in a consistent way, even though it's politically viable for them now, and it may not have been a year ago, anyone who speaks out against this war is a positive movement, because it is clear that it's going to keep going on. And I still believe that they've achieved what they wanted to achieve there. They're going to build that fortress of an embassy there. They're going to build a fortress of a base there. And now I read this morning that guy, Chinese President Hu, went over to Saudi Arabia to cut a deal with them to shoot them some weapons with a guarantee of Saudi crude, which would talk about that sort of we used to have a lot of conversations with Bob Baer, the ex-CIA guy, the guy Syriana is based on, about how Saudi Arabia and the inconsistency and instability of the government there makes America a little bit nervous. And now with China aligning themselves for that oil, and we're sort of stuck in a rock and are going to have to eventually open up that spigot, that whatever's going on there, there's going to be an American presence there no matter what for a long time. But anyways, let's talk about this real quick. And then I want to talk about Earth Day with you, because I watched that special. I'm going to talk about Earth Day.
Which special?
I watched the special the Larry David produced, Too Hot to Handle. And that was pretty mind-blowing. But look at this, man. George Bush gets out in front of the American people and says, massive deportation of the people here is not going to work. And he's talking about the 11 million illegal immigrants. And then from Florida, his brother state, 183 were arrested, 100 illegal immigrants in a basically a sweep. So I guess the theory is that Bush says that we can't deport 11 million workers, despite the fact that they do help the economy on some level. But it seems that there is an underlying other policy that says we may put them in prison, which could explain those FEMA camps that they've been building. So, in other words, we don't want to pay them a fair wage or let them pay taxes or let them be American citizens, but we don't mind putting them into prisons where money to support those prisons will go into the pockets.
We can let them work at the American Embassy in
Iraq. Republican cronies. Yeah, well,
there's enough room.
They're already over there. We'll be back in a second.
He's gouging people at the pump. Mark Maron.
Gouging? I'm getting gouged. Man, was it like $3? My tank's on empty. I'm afraid to go to the damn gas station.
It's like $7 in my block.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
I think that you're being definitely gouged.
No,
more than most people.
Really?
I think so.
I can't believe what a sucker I am.
Angelino Heights. Saul Williams will be here in a little while. Hip-hop poet laureate, congressional candidate Marcy Winograd will be here to talk about the new infusion of power and courage into the Democratic Party. That's going to happen.
Yeah.
Finally, I mean, I watch
it. I'm sorry for laughing at that, but yeah.
Now, can you be nice? Can we have some hope?
Yeah.
Is that okay? Can we have a little hope?
I have a lot of hope. I have very much hope.
Yeah, but it has nothing to do with party politics, unfortunately. You want to generate a third party that will change everything from the ground up.
I have a
up.
Lot of hope that the Democrats will show spine this time around. You know, they
gotta,
have the opportunity. I think they should. You know?
I got to wear my Russ Feingold shirt that guy sent me with the spine on back. I love that shirt. So, look, you live in Angelino Heights. We were just talking about that a minute ago. You're not going to believe who I ran into on Friday. On Saturday night, I'm having dinner with Bill Kolar, a producer, Sweepy Bill Kolar. And guess who I run into who's living in Angelino Heights, probably in your damn building?
Oh, no.
Yeah, well, not that bad. My ex-wife.
Margaret Cho?
No, not your ex. My ex. My ex-wife walked in with her husband, and here's what I did. I'm sitting like she walks in the front door, and I'm sitting at the booth right in front of the door, and here's how I was hiding. I put my hand in front of my face.
And she recognized that.
Well, yeah, she's like, who's the sad man? He reminds me of my ex-husband. And it was, you know, and I literally was trying to hide because I didn't want her to be uncomfortable. I wasn't that uncomfortable.
Wow.
I was happy to see him. I sat down. I jumped up. I talked to the two of them for a while. I never really talked to him. I was the bad guy in this thing. So if she's cool with me, then it's cool. So I talked to them a while, and it was really nice to see her, and I got all choked up, kind of. And he's a nice guy, and I was very mm-hmm. happy for the two of them. And then after dinner, Bill, I knew they had to be down the street at that other restaurant. So I was like, I'm going to go hang out some more with my ex-wife and her new husband. So I went into the other restaurant, and then it was really overstaying the welcome. Then it became awkward. Like, I'm sitting there, and it got to that point where it's sort of like, so you guys, I guess I got to go. You know, I shouldn't eat dessert with you guys. I'm getting a little emotional. I got to go. And that was that. But we were able to catch up with family stuff. So
they live in Angelina Heights?
They do. I got to find out if they live in your building.
Oh.
That is not in Marcy's district, by the way. So you don't ask her about Angelina Heights. She's she's the coast, man. But look, let's talk about we don't have to talk about Lori David specifically because I know that's a touchy subject for you.
No, it's not a touchy. Well, go ahead.
But Too Hot Not to Handle, the documentary on HBO, was very informative and very proactive and very encouraging and hopeful in terms of dealing with some of these issues about global warming. The thing that I found most thrilling about it, to be honest with you, is the city of Portland and what the city of Portland has done under the guidance of their mayor and under the guidance of local businesses is that they're slowly sort of making an environmentally friendly urban environment with the help of all the businesses there. There was a guy that owned a pizza shop that was heating his water with the recycled heat from the pizza oven. And he hasn't had to pay for gas bills on the water for 2 years since he's been open. He's delivering the pizza in battery-operated cars. I mean, and they apparently there's an outside chance that the entire planet might be able to be run off the energy of the sun once the technology becomes more affordable and more succinct. And that's much better than getting burned by the sun, isn't it? Than melting away by the sun?
I believe that technology could have been available like 40 years ago.
Why can't you just say, I hope that happens?
I think it could happen. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying it could have happened 40 years ago.
Well, I don't know if that's true that could have happened 40 years ago.
If we had spent the amount of money we spent in oil research...
See how you twist it?
A lot of money we spend every year in the last 40 years, half century, on searching for oil, new oil. We could have put that into solar research and other alternate forms of energy, which we haven't been doing.
Hey, look, I'm a last-minute kind of guy. I'm guilty of it myself. You know what I mean? It's like I didn't write the paper till the night before. Maybe we have to wait till the world is almost ended before we actually take action. What are you going to do?
I'm just saying, you know, what is it? Winston Churchill, I'm going to repeat this again. Winston Churchill said America does... America is famous for doing all the wrong things before they do the right thing. You know?
America. And people in general a lot of times.
But with the environment, we can't wait that long before we start doing the right thing.
Hold on a minute. Let me write that down. Are you telling me that we can't wait much longer because the environment is bad?
Yes. You better write that down. Write that down on recyclable paper.
I did. I just bought 3 reams of recyclable paper. That makes a difference. The little things do make a difference.
Yeah.
This was 100% recycled, not just 30% recycled at Staples. I got the 100% recycled paper.
Well,
what happens to that now, though? Can they do it again? Doesn't it eventually break down too much to where you can't actually recycle it again?
I have no idea.
Come on, I thought you knew this kind of stuff.
Maybe it has arsenic in it, like most paper does.
Always a negative thing. Man.
Well, it's not a happy thing. Okay, how about this? Maybe it has arsenic in it.
How about not saying that at all? See, the idea is I use recyclable paper,
I'm praising that.
And then you go, but there's probably arsenic in it.
Well, saying that, you know, everything is deceptive in this fight.
No, you're not.
There's so many deceptive things.
That's not deception.
I think
you can't. This is exactly why.
This is why I think most of America is deluding themselves and in denial about global warming.
No.
And the way they can fight against it.
We're going to get to meat in a minute. But I'm just trying to point out to you the way that your brain works and the way that it hinders progress in the sense that this is a big progressive this is a progressive problem. The progressive problem is a lot of progressives think they know best, that what they believe in is all that's important, and because that is all that's important, all they will do is argue with other progressives who may be doing something else along the same lines.
I think you're stifling dissent.
No, I'm not.
You see, well, I am agreeing okay. exactly with what that pizza guy is doing, with what Lori David is doing, and everybody else who's fighting global warming. I think it's about time, and it's great.
Let's talk about meat, because this is something that, you know, you like to talk about. I think it's an important issue, yeah. agricultural issues, meat consumption, meat production, agricultural production. A lot of times it's not talked about, although corn production in terms of making ethanol is part of the wave of the future. That's a good thing.
That's a very good thing.
But let's talk about meat specifically right now, because I don't want you to feel like you haven't got to air your belief that the main problem with environmental policy is that people eat too much meat.
I think that is people. The main problem is with America in particular is a huge meat eating base culture, and it is in denial about the effects of producing meat, and it contributes to at least one quarter of the greenhouse gases. Two more scientists at the University of Chicago came out last week or the week before that and said, in as much that right there, they said that it is the most wasteful form of food in the way it's produced, and they weren't even talking about
small farm stuff.
They weren't even talking about the amount of rainforest that have to be clear cut every year, month,
just so Burger King can make a Whopper.
Right, just so grazing land that lasts maybe 2 to 3 years at the most, and then it turns into desert.
What if I raise a pig? What if I raise a pig in my backyard or a goat maybe?
You know, if you raise that for
what if I decide to eat my cats? Am I a bad guy? I guess, I am a bad guy if I eat my cats. That's horrendous.
Eat your cats. Eat your neighbor's cats.
No. Fine. I'm just saying that isn't there something to be said about local farming, about regional farming?
Of course,
that's environmentally friendly.
But you know, most agriculture goes into producing meat, and it's hugely wasteful, and it poisons the groundwater. It produces greenhouse gases, methane.
Okay.
And poisons it.
Yes,
so much
true.
Of Iowa is laid to waste right now, and you know that's worse. That's
they had it coming.
That is like a nuclear accident.
Iowa.
That's like a nuclear accident. People, would be outraged if there were a nuclear accident in the middle of Iowa.
But do you know that?
Well, some people. But I think they would.
There's a limit to.
But they don't talk about it. The media.
You're right.
And it's like, 10 years ago or 20 years ago, vegetarians were looked down upon, and people still make jokes about vegetarians.
They deserve to be made fun of some level.
Okay.
Look at you. Look at Bill. It's horrendous on some level.
Yeah, he's a hippie freak, but that's beside the point. I'm just saying that, this country, it turned to meat like 120 years ago.
Yeah.
And from being a primarily an agricultural-based diet.
Right, a healthy, like potatoes,
the
beans,
the cattle industry
soups.
Influenced that. And for the last 150 years or so, we have been killing ourselves health-wise and the earth in the process.
There is a limit to meat substitutes you can eat. That apparently, if you eat too much tofu or soy products, you will grow a vagina. Which is not a bad thing, for a guy, it's awkward midway through the life.
Well, if you're very lonely, you can use a vagina.
Oh, now wait a minute. Look, this is speaking about the FDA. Marcy Winograd's out there, and I'm feeling a little embarrassed. And she's like, what did I do? What did I get myself into? Why am I? For a while there, she's like, I want to get into the conversation. Now she's like,
you went across the line.
I should probably just leave. That's it. She walked. That's it. She's out. I'll vote for her, though. Even if I can't, I'm going to. Look, speaking of the FDA, I'm in this argument with, not an argument, but you know how I feel about aspartame.
All right. Absolutely, yeah.
And I believe.
I just watched part of that.
Now, you watch that. Those aren't fake doctors. That's real research.
No, they aren't, but I want to know the footnotes. Most documentaries have footnotes for the research. I want to see the full footnotes.
All right, well, we can get the footnotes. What I am saying is that there is scientific research. There are studies that have been taken on aspartame that show that it produces fairly consistently brain tumors in cats. It does produce neurological disorders in people that are sensitive to it. It may not be as bad as they think it is, or but this woman I'm having an argument with is saying that I'm guilty of religious thinking.
Religious?
Okay?
What?
Well, yeah. Well, I had a back and forth with her. Remember, I read her email. She was the doctor who said that I was talking out my ass, right? So I said
that's another symptom,
air.
By the way.
No, right. So I said, she goes, hi, Mark. You mentioned my previous email on Tuesday's show. Cool. I actually have taken courses in nutrition and read a lot about it. Sometimes I even eat healthy food. Good for you. I hope you looked at the talking points about your guest who hates aspartame. It seemed pretty straightforward to me. And then she sends me to Urban Legends. All right, that website that debunks things. Who cares? Who the hell are those people? That's enough for somebody? All right, well, look. Her rantings on the web are similar to the ones my aunt always sends me, telling me deodorant causes breast cancer. It doesn't. Her fear of aspartame is kind of like religious thinking, as is yours. I did something. I felt bad. I won't do it anymore, and it won't happen again. Science would be actual objective research linking the doing and the feeling. This has been done with aspartame, and aspartame is okay. Your sort of thinking is like, I ate pork, some flowers in the garden wilted, therefore I won't eat pork anymore. Thus, my flowers will be fine. That's ridiculous. I'm not basing this on hearsay. There is scientific evidence. Now, fine, if you want to believe the FDA is working in your best interest, given what you're talking about, the meat business, given that the FDA has been pimped out to lobbyists, right, given all those things, and given the fact that Donald Rumsfeld pushed through the passing of aspartame when he was the head of CERL, all right? He pushed it through not because it was safe, because the company was in jeopardy. And there are doctors that believe it is bad for you. So, fine, I have no doubt that people can process and eat aspartame, even though it does actually break down as something that looks like formaldehyde in your body, and it does break down into wood alcohol because of the methyl ester in it. Fine. I'm not saying that humans can't adapt to that or that it won't kill them, but I choose not to eat it based on the research that was shared with me through a couple of different sources. Granted, might not kill me, might not cause brain cancer, might not do anything to me, but I'm choosing not to eat it based on science, not based on some sort of speculation. So this condescending tone that she comes at me with, I find irritating. All right, look. Got a couple of great guests coming up. You're going to do some poetry right before a real poet comes on, Jim. All right? Saul Williams is going to be here. Marcy Winograd will be here. So will you. So stay listening.
And now his childhood nickname was Spanky. Mark Maron.
Jerry Stahl, my buddy Jerry Stahl, wrote me an email, said he was at Victor's restaurant. Victor's up there on Franklin, owned by John Gotti's brother, by the way. He was at the coffee shop there, and he overheard in the booth next to him two elderly Jewish women say, there's a show on late at night. Why am I doing an accent? A show on late at night on Air America hosted by a nice young Jewish man. Very funny, hilarious. I figure I listen, I can't sleep anyways.
Wow, really?
Yeah, how do you like that? Those are our peeps, my friend. So you've got some poetry to lay on me, my friend?
Yeah, I mean, you're having a real poet on later on in this show. I figured, you know, I'd bring in some more of my poetry.
Now Marcy's going to walk. All right, go ahead.
It's a poetic trilogy, three poems.
How long is this going to take?
As long as it takes.
Okay.
It's like the war.
All right, go, man.
Socks are important for many reasons. They protect your feet. They envelop your feet in warm comfort. Feet are the foundation of your body and need protection. Socks keep you from remembering the bad things that happened in the room at the end of the hall. I had a twin brother who smothered in fish vomit. God, they wore socks. Nice ones. The best socks are given to you. Although many times you can buy very nice ones. This is the point. Socks are really, really important. I haven't even gotten to shoes yet. Okay, this is a second.
That's the first one of the trilogy.
Yeah.
That's deep, man.
Have you ever noticed how cheese and sand are different? Cheese is high in fat. Sand has none. Cheese is cheesy. Sand is sandy. There is cheese cloth and sand paper. But no sand cloth or cheese paper. Why? We're all pawns in a grand game. There is cheese in my pants. Brie. Third poem.
Does this tie it all together? Or
third poem.
All right, sorry.
I f*** her like a horse.
Whoa.
Like a horse f***s another horse. In the stable or corral, with people watching my monolithic horse penis.
Oh, boy.
The applause is deafening. My giant horse penis and I drink thirstily from Nestor's cup. We are never satiated. When will this horse penis thing stop? Thank you.
Well, hold on. Let me say goodbye to Marcy. Yeah, nice job, buddy. That was great. That was great. Now we got a bleep and things. And that Saul, look at Saul's furious. He's furious that you would You would take his art form and drag it through the mud with your nonsense, you know.
It's a sign of good art.
What?
Being provocative.
You're like the Dadaist. I know. I enjoy your poetry. It's very nice. I really do. So, look, I'm going to tell you again. We got Saul Williams coming up. We got Marcy Winograd coming up. We've got I watched Howard Dean at the Democratic National Convention on C-SPAN. I do watch a little C-SPAN. Did you watch that, Marcy? He was very impressive. We'll talk about that when you come in here. But I am actually getting excited for these midterm elections because I believe there's no way in hell that the Democrats cannot take back the House. Am I right? Oh, no. Marcy is that she gave me the nod from the booth of yes, if we. Uh-huh. And that's what we're going to find out in just a few minutes. But in the meantime, Jim.
Yes. Yes. What
are you? Who are some of your favorite poets? I mean, in all honesty, you're a guy that went to art school and you read some poetry in your time. I actually wanted to be a poet in earnest when I was in college.
I'm going to say something really that you're going to think is really pretentious, and say I like Homer.
Really?
And there's this guy named Robert Walser, a German poet from.
I think Homer's a safe bet. Homer, as far as defining the heroic epic and writing the deep poetry, the rosy fingered dawn
and
business.
Yevgeny Zamyatin was a prose.
Is that a real name?
Yeah, he wrote We, which is the precursor to 1984.
What's it called?
We.
Did you know about that?
Who are you talking to?
I'm talking to people in the booth.
Kohler?
I'm trying to bring them in. Trying to bring them in because it gives the illusion that we're having. Saul's like, have you heard of that guy? No. See? All right.
Yeah, but you've heard of 1984.
Sure, that's a popular book by George Orwell.
Yeah.
And was very prescient.
Directly.
Is that the word?
Lifted
prescient?
From We. Read We.
How come everything has to be lifted and there's always a crime at the heart of everything?
Well, it's not a crime. Orwell admitted to it.
But, I mean, why can't we just say, well, good job with that guy? Now you got to say that Orwell ripped it off?
Well, he admitted ripping it off.
What do you mean? Did he rip it off or did he build on it?
It was a Russian translation that he translated or reviewed and like 12.
Did he appropriate it or did he?
Oh, man.
Did he plagiarize it?
He really appropriated it, yeah.
The thing is that, like, I've grown to believe that there is original thinking, there is hacking, but there is also natural growth that evolves through art forms, that you cannot have one without the other. You and your pathological obsession with the Beatles should know that, that without, say, the Everly Brothers,
yeah.
Buddy Holly,
yeah.
Smokey Robinson, any number of great acts before them, they would not have been able to converge on the expression in the form that they came with.
I agree wholeheartedly with
that. So why don't you say that?
They transformed it and made it their own.
Well, you know, you're going to end up like a rambling Jack Elliott. You're going to end up one of these people that just wanders around going, Dylan stole me. There's no Dylan without me. And the truth of the matter is that sometimes it takes a better artist, a better person to express the ideas that are found in something else to do it in a fuller way.
Have you read We?
I'm going to read it.
Yeah, you know, in my opinion, it's beautiful. It's much better than Orwell.
What I'm telling you is, Ramblin' Jack Elliott, whether he existed or not, was only a fraction of what Dylan became. And he was an influence, but he did not steal Dylan. It's, you know, it's like the guy running around going, Lenny Bruce, what was that guy's name? Oh, now I can't remember his name. Lenny Bruce is doing me, not Mort Saul, who will be here tomorrow. We'll be back in a second with Saul Williams.
The pledge to resist. We believe that as a people living in the United States, it is our responsibility to resist the injustices done by our government in our names. Not in our name will you wage endless war. There can be no more deaths, no more transfusions of blood for oil. Not in our name. Will you invade countries, bomb civilians, kill more children, letting history take its course over the graves of the nameless? Not in our names will you erode the very freedoms you have claimed to fight for. Not by our hands will we supply weapons and funding for the annihilation of families on foreign soil. Not by our mouths will we let fear silence us. Not by our hearts will we allow whole peoples or countries to be deemed evil. Not by our will and not in our name. We pledge resistance. We pledge alliance with those who have undergone attack for voicing opposition to the war or for their religion or ethnicity. We pledge to make common cause with the people of the world to bring about justice, freedom, and peace. Another world is possible, and we pledge to make it real.
Saul Williams has been called the Poet Laureate of hip-hop. He is the author of three collections of poetry. I recently saw him on an old Russell Simmons Deaf Poetry Jam. He has performed and lectured around the world. He drafted the Not in Our Name Initiative's Pledge of Resistance, which you just heard. He's here to talk about his new book, The Dead MC Scrolls, The Lost Teachings of Hip-Hop. How are you, Saul? Thanks for coming.
I'm wonderful, man.
I think that was we were talking about dissent earlier, and it seems to me that in the history, certainly of this country and what I know of it, that poets have stepped to the foreground in terms of voicing dissent in a way that people understand.
Definitely. Poets have always resurfaced in the mainstream, being the voices of dissent or what have you, whenever there's a shift in cultural consciousness or whatever. You wouldn't have had, you know, the hippie movement or what have you of the 60s without the beat poetry.
That's right.
You know, before it, you wouldn't have had the civil rights era without the Harlem Renaissance preceding that. You wouldn't have had the black arts movement or the black power movement without the black arts movement preceding that.
There's a cadence to it. There's an honesty to it. And like when I started reading your book, the new book, The Dead MC Scrolls, I'm sorry I don't have the other books, but I'm going to get them. Because there was a period in my life where I was very interested in poetry. It was very important to me. I studied English and whatnot. And when you set up the device or the conceit, or I don't know if you're owning it as a real event in your life.
This book is a creative endeavor.
Right.
You know?
The idea that you bring together through this, you want to talk about that in the confession.
Yes.
At the beginning of the book, you're basically saying to the people that have known you for years that you
haven't known me for years,
right.
Actually.
and that is because why?
And that is because in this book, in the confessions, I set up a device to reveal something. And the point of the device is simply to say that oftentimes we poets do not necessarily feel like the author of our work,
right.
That we feel spoken through. And so I set up a device to say I was spoken through, I was used by something, and these poems that you may know me for, I am not actually the author of.
You are a vessel. And in this, the device, can we talk about it? Will it tip the book too much?
Well, I think that if you're asking the question, then you must feel the answer is implied there somewhere. So I would say let's talk about it, but let's not give it away so people can still read the confession.
Okay, I got it. So what I want to know is it seems to me that the way you used it is that you were able to draw from what you see as almost, you know, it's ancient in the sense that you go all the way back to Egypt, all the way back through ancient Africa, up through hip-hop and up through where we are now culturally to sort of create this language.
Self-mythologizing,
yeah.
You know, is what I'm playing with. You know, I took a great deal of truth and a great deal of imagination and blended it together, you know, to create something that would be captivating. I mean, the goal of the book, The Dead MC Scrolls, was to write the dopest hip-hop album never recorded. You know, my question was, how would it live on the page?
Yeah.
You
now,
know?
I do know. And I was talking to you a little bit on the break that I, you know, As I grew up, I didn't miss hip hop, but I tried to engage with it, but I never did engage with it as deeply as I wanted to. And recently, I got an album. I don't know if you know this album, Voices from the Front Line. Have you heard about this?
I'm familiar with that album. I haven't listened to it, but I have heard of it.
And because I got the guy coming on later in the week, and these are guys and women and men in Iraq who rap and use the form to express their feelings about what it's like to be a soldier in Iraq. And it's not necessarily an album of dissent, but I was very moved by it, and I want to know, if I go back, I want to know how I can engage, because it seems to me that from reading this book, your book, that there was a period in time where you were disillusioned with hip-hop for reasons that were specific.
Oh, definitely. I mean, hip-hop started off as party music, you know, although it's always represented the voice of the disenfranchised. But around the mid-80s, 86, 87, 88, was when groups like Public Enemy, mm-hmm. KRS-One, Eric B. and Rakim, Queen Latifah, several groups came out and shifted hip-hop and made it the voice of youth rebellion. And it was at that point that hip-hop became international. Mm-hmm. And groups, you know, in the Ukraine and in South Africa and in Cuba started, you know, groups that felt disenfranchised themselves used hip-hop as a vehicle also to speak up. So it became, you know, less of the party music thing and more of the language of youth rebellion. And then after that, in the early 90s, it shifted
to,
again, to what most people are familiar with when they think of hip-hop nowadays.
To where, know, it gets negatively judged for...
For misogyny, gangsterism, blah, 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 blah. Although all of that stuff, you know, has its validity, but there was a time that is referred to by hip-hop heads as the golden era.
Right.
You know, and that golden era was the point when it was synonymous with being the music of youth rebellion.
It seems to me that, you know, the as you got older and you re-examined the history of hip-hop for yourself, that you seem to see that as maybe a growth spurt, that we are now moving into a new age of poetry and hip-hop that is going to facilitate some cultural awareness again.
Exactly. I mean, when I look at, you know, the popularity of this spoken word movement, like you mentioned Homer as your favorite poet, Jimmy, earlier. But, you know, the thing about Homer to remember is that Homer was not a famous writer in his time. You know, people gathered to hear him speak. Most people were illiterate. People gathered to hear him speak. Today, he'd be called a spoken word artist.
Right. And he was blind and he could memorize all that
exactly.
stuff.
Exactly.
That's unbelievable.
So that, when I'm, you know, at these open mics and poetry slams and what have you, I'm not there. They're excited because we're participating in something new. I'm actually excited because we're participating in something old. And like I said, whenever this thing resurfaces, it is because there is a new truth, essentially, or a new understanding of the truth that is surfacing amongst the people. And the people are calling it into existence, you know?
And what are the truths right now that you feel are that need to be addressed? Obviously, with the Not In Our Name movement, that there's something about, there has to be a public dissent against the war, which I think is starting to really mobilize now. But how about culturally?
Well, culturally, you know, you look within America, I think that it's about time that people are starting to realize that they are human before they're American,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that there is a great deal of responsibility that comes with power, and that oftentimes our comfort may come at others' discomfort, and that we need to, you know, simply analyze that, and we need to be more aware of our impact as human beings,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I think the youth are finding it very easy to do that as they shop at, you know, the American Apparel and just like, oh, you know, the youth are finding it very easy. But those of us who are already deeply embedded within ourselves and our approach to life are finding it difficult to break away from the things that we're learning about. Like, oh, my God, my Nikes are made where?
Right. That's true. And that type of denial, it's almost more powerful because the propaganda that comes from marketing and from keeping people buying those things and from the trends that exist in society. Some people are willing to say, I know it's bad, but does it look good? You know, I mean, they're willing to do that. And to break through that is difficult. But how about in terms of class and race in this country post-Katrina? It seems to me that the entire country is willing to wake up to the realities of racial issues and class issues again that were not as prominent as they once were.
I think that the youth of today are definitely startled to realize. I mean, for many people, for many young people, the Katrina incident was the first time that they saw glaringly how racism exists
mm-hmm.
within our government, within the infrastructure, and what have you. So that they were shocked in the same way that many of us young people were shocked, you know, at the last elections. Like, oh my God, there's half of the nation
mm-hmm.
that believes in something fully that I just thought was, you know, obviously not the case.
Right. Yeah, I think that's true, and I think that if we could just figure out how to get kids to vote, then we'd really be moving towards something. Do you want to? Will you do a couple pieces after the break?
Kid sure,
you?
Man. Whatever
right.
you want.
So let's take a quick break, and we'll be back with Saul Williams. We'll do a couple of pieces, either whatever your choice. Your choice.
It all depends on how much time you want to give me to read a poem.
Okay, great.
And now he just launched his new laptop, Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. We're here in studio with Saul Williams, poet, hip-hop artist, man of many trades in a way. We're going to have him do a couple of poems, or one poem, actually, and then I want to talk to him about what he's got going on. You can go to SaulWilliams.com to get up-to-date information on where he's at and get the book and everything else. There's a link to it on MarkMaron.com. But now, Saul, you're going to read from the Dead MC Scrolls. This is the new book.
Sure.
The Lost Teachings of Hip-Hop. Which one are you going to do?
I'll read a poem called Coded Language. Which is a somewhat of a manifesto. It's more of a manifesto than a poem, but, you know, it's a book of poetry, so whatever. I won't set it up. I'll just read it.
Do it.
Whereas breakbeats have been the missing link connecting the diasporic community to its drumoven past. Whereas the quantized drum has allowed the whirling mathematicians to calculate the ever-changing distance between rock and stardom. Whereas the velocity of spinning vinyl, cross-faded, spun backwards, and re-released at the same given moment of recorded history, yet at a different moment in time's continuum, has allowed history to catch up with the present. We do hereby declare reality unkept by the changing standards of dialogue. Statements such as, keep it real, especially when punctuating or anticipating modes of ultra-violence inflicted psychologically or physically will henceforth be seen as retroactive and not representative of the individually determined is. Furthermore, as determined by the collective consciousness of this state of being and the lessened distance between thought patterns and their secular manifestations, the role of men as listening receptacles is to be increased by number no less than 70% of the current enlisted as vocal aggressors. Motherfuckers, and when I say motherfucker, I mean literally those who desecrate that which is feminine, maternal, matriarchal, truthful. Motherfuckers better realize, now is the time to self-actualize. We have found evidence that hip-hop standard 85 RPM, when increased by number of release half the rate of its standard, or decreased to 3/4 of its speed, may be a determining factor in heightening consciousness. Studies show that when the given norm is changed in the face of the unchanging, the remaining contradictions will parallel the truth. Equate rhyme with reason, sun with season. Our cyclical relationship to phenomenon has encouraged scholars to erase the centers of periods, thus symbolizing the non-linear character of cause and effect. Reject mediocrity. Your current frequencies of understanding outweigh that which has been given for you to understand. The current standard is the equivalent of an adolescent who stricts the diet of an infant. The rapidly changing body would acquire dysfunction and deformative symptoms and could not properly mature on a diet of applesauce and crushed pears. Light years are interchanged with years of living in darkness. The role of darkness is not to be seen as or equated with ignorance, but with the unknown and the mysteries of the unseen. Thus, in the name of Robeson, Godson, Hurston, Akhenaten, had Chetput, Blackfoot, Helen, Lennon, Kahlo, Kali, the Three Marias, Tara, Lilith, Lord, Whitman, Baldwin, Ginsburg, Kaufman, Lumumba, Gandhi, Gibran, Shabazz, Siddhartha, Medusa, Guevara, Gurdjieff, Rand, Wright, Banneker, Tubman, Hamer, Holiday, Davis, Coltrane, Morrison, Joplin, Du Bois, Clark, Shakespeare, Rachmaninoff, Ellington, Carter, Gay, Hathaway, Hendrix, Kuti, Dickinson, Ripperton, Mary, Isis, Teresa, Hansberry, Tesla, Plath, Rumi, Fellini, Michaud, Nostradamus, Nefertiti, Larocque, Shiva, Ganesha, Yemaya, Oshun, Obatala, Ogun, Kennedy, King, Four Little Girls, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, Keller, Biko, Marley, Magdalene, Cosby, Shakur, Those Who Burn, Those Still Aflame, and the countless unnamed. We claim the present as the present, as the hereafter. We unraveling our navels so that men just the sun. We are not afraid of the darkness. We trust that the moon shall guide us. We are determining the future at this very moment. We know that the heart is the philosopher's stone. Our music is our alchemy. We stand as a manifest equivalent of 3 buckets of water and a handful of minerals, thus realizing that those very buckets turned upside down supply the percussive factor up forever. If you must count to keep the beat, then count. Find your mantra and awaken your subconscious. Carve your circles counterclockwise. Use your cipher to decipher coded language, man-made laws, climb waterfalls and trees, commune with nature, snakes and bees. Let your children name themselves and claim themselves as the new day. For today, we are determined to be the channelers of these changing frequencies into songs, paintings, writings, dance, drama, photography, carpentry, crafts, love, and love. We enlist every instrument, acoustic, electronic, every so-called gender, race, sexual orientation, every person as beings of sound to acknowledge the responsibility to uplift the consciousness of the entire world. Any utterance unaimed will be disclaimed, will be maimed. 2 rappers slain.
Oh, man. That rocks, man.
Thank you, man.
Really? And I, you know, you told me on the break that you opened for Trent Reznor and Nine Inch Nails on the road, and I'm trying to picture how that would work. But after that, I told you,
poetry is the new punk rock.
It is. Hence the new look for Saul Williams, which you'll see on the website because we're gonna put a picture up there. That's tremendous, man. So how were you received with that audience? I mean, that is.
It's been awesome. I mean, mind you, I was doing music. I have a self-titled album that's been out for a while. I did my first album with Rick Rubin. My second album, the self-titled one, which is what I was doing on the road with Nine Inch Nails, is pretty hardcore. And now I'm working on my third album, which is actually produced by Trent Reznor.
Wow,
that's great. And so the audiences were extremely receptive. You know, of course, they're very doubtful when hearing about it at first. Like, a rapper is opening up for, you know, Nine Inch Nails? Well, I don't want to see that. I'm showing up late or what have you. But, you know, when they show up, we break the boundaries. And
did you do any just plain spoken words?
Oh, for sure. Definitely.
Because I find that sometimes when you're just up there talking, just out of a moment of discomfort, like where they're like, oh, it's just one person, they shut up, they focus.
Exactly. I mean, I use the music as a means of creating the spaces where I can take away the music and recite a poem.
That's awesome, man. And it sounds, I think I highly recommend this book. And not that the poem wasn't enough, but in the introduction you say, the more I read, the more I begin to believe that these words have been written by someone African in origin, perhaps some sort of shaman who foresaw slavery and the calculated oppression of African people and had planted this text to guide us to a crucial moment in our history, our future, our present. I thought intensely about the power of hip-hop. Had it also been planted by these African shamans as some sort of seed that would not blossom until four generations after slavery, did it somehow hold the key to helping us express the greatest idea of freedom imaginable? Could any music have that sort of power? And that to me is the through line through that confession.
Thank you, man. Yeah, I mean, my recurring question through the years has been, how can an MC not realize the power of word after being forced to serve a sentence?
Well, I'll tell you, you laid it down today. I am definitely in awe of the power of word.
Thank you,
and
sir.
I thank you for coming, Saul Williams.
It's great to be here.
And now, if asked, he will not accept the nomination for president. Mark Maron.
Yeah, not right away. All right, folks, let's keep moving with the messages and keep the show going. This is as president of the Progressive Democrats of Los Angeles, Marcy Winograd helped getting an anti-war resolution passed at last year's California Democratic Convention. She also helped to draft a resolution calling for a moratorium on depleted uranium weapons system. She helped establish a California Election Protection Network, a grassroots organization that successfully lobbied for a state bill requiring a paper trail for electronic voting recounts. She hosts They Say, We Say on Public Access Television. It's a show which highlights the plight of returning veterans. She's an outspoken proponent of citizen activism. She is now running for Congress in the 36th District here in California. That's a 30-mile area stretching in the south from San Pedro up through Wilmington, Torrance, and the beach cities to Venice, Mar Vista, and parts of West L.A. in the north. She is running against the bordering on Republican Jane Harman. Welcome to the show, Marcy Winograd. Thank you for coming.
And thank you for having me. What a great pleasure it is to be here with you, Mark.
I'm so glad you're here because I am getting very energized by progressive Democrats like yourself who are having the courage to speak out and do what's necessary to take back our country. Now, does Jane Harman represent she's not even a Democrat. Really?
Well, she was quoted in the LA Times as saying, "I am flattered to be considered the best Republican in the Democratic Party."
That's unbelievable that she's proud of that. Now, what made you just decide? Because you were doing a lot of activism outside of actually being in elected politics.
That's right. You know, it's kind of a funny story because in the weeks preceding my decision, I had no idea, no clue that I was going to jump into this race for Congress. Mm-hmm. And I'll get to that in a minute. But I was working with a friend, another progressive, and we were looking everywhere. It was like a game of hide and seek. Where can we find a candidate to challenge some of these pro-war incumbents in the Democratic Party. And we looked, and I called Ron Kovic, who was the co-founder of Vietnam Veterans Against the War. I spent a few days trying to convince him to challenge Jane Harman because he lives in Manhattan Beach. And ultimately, he said no. And then one day, and I had given up.
Yeah.
You know, I had given up on that game. Yeah. And then one day, I was walking through my den. It was a Sunday morning. My husband was doing his sit-ups. I was bleary-eyed looking for something to eat. And he said, Marcy, you have got to watch this Meet the Press interview with Jane Harman.
Uh-huh.
So I stood and thought, well, I'll just catch it for a minute because I was really hungry. And there she was saying that she was indeed the ranking Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee who had met for over a year with the Bush administration and had heard the details of the warrantless wiretapping program, the Bush lawbreaking program of spying on Americans, and had indeed done nothing, said nothing, not even a boo.
Yeah.
Until after the story broke in the New York Times, and at that point she went on Meet the Press to say it was deplorable that this government abuse had been revealed.
Right.
And when I heard that, Mark, it was as though there was no other choice. People will say to me, wow, Marcy, you are really courageous to take on a six-term incumbent with a war chest of $550,000. And my response is, courageous, maybe, just compelled, though, really.
Yeah.
No other choice right now.
Right.
We stand on the precipice of losing our democracy. We are listening to leaders within our own party who are shredding the Constitution, shredding our Bill of Rights. We are about to launch another war in Iran. Who knows what type of war this will be. And so the time is ripe for activism.
Isn't that, it's amazing to me that you get people like, you know, John Kerry spoke out on Saturday, even Howard Dean a bit, that it's now, the time has come, and it's a little late for a lot of Democrats in the sense that you wish they had done it earlier, but this war is now, even to the regular people, is unjustifiable to even the most war-hungry people. So this is the time to really start speaking out about this.
That's right. We are facing such a crisis that it behooves every individual listening to this program to summon the activism within themselves and organize. Right now, we are looking at people who are locked up forever without due process, without access to a lawyer. When elected, I would immediately work to restore due process, to restore civil liberties gutted under the Patriot Act, to bring home the troops, cut funding for the war.
Mm-hmm.
How ironic that it has to be a Supreme Court nominee, Roberts, who tells the Democratic leadership that if you really want to end the war, you need to cut the funds.
And how about, can we, now it seems to me, and we'll talk about the House of Representatives, it seems to me that there's definitely a shot that the Democrats can take it back. Now, would you support, at least taking some action to investigate this administration, impeach this president?
Some action. I support impeachment. In fact, I will be, Winograd for Congress will be co-sponsoring an impeachment forum next weekend at the Democratic Party convention in Sacramento. And that is going to be one heck of a convention because the progressives are organized. We now have a progressive caucus. We fought for recognition. And we have that caucus. The caucus will be meeting and holding this impeachment forum and struggling to get the impeachment resolution to be embedded in the party platform. So this will be one struggle at the convention. Another will be the endorsement in the 36th Congressional District. A few weeks ago, without going into too much detail, Winograd for Congress was able to block Jane Harman's pre-endorsement going into the convention, something that is virtually unheard of.
That's great. That's good news.
You know, she's going to the convention without an endorsement. At the convention, now that the delegate pool that will be voting on her endorsement has been purged of the grassroots, she will predictably get that endorsement. But not end of story, Mark, because Winograd for Congress will object. We will get 300 signatures. We will push this to a floor fight and to a very extensive debate on the future of the California Party and the future of the Democratic Party in general. Is this the party of grassroots activism, of the possibility of peace, or is it the party of allegiance to the Bush administration's eternal war?
Well, that's just, let's talk about that for one second. There is this, I've never bought it, and a lot of people that listen to this network don't buy it. There is no such thing. There is no center. There is no centrist. I mean, democratic values are what they are, and people have to commit to them. And there's been this constant fear among Democrats to make commitments to certain points of view, to certain opinions, out of fear of reprisals, which it makes them look worse.
Exactly. And I say to those who criticize, and, you know, there are plenty of people on the ground who will say, Marcy Winograd, how can you challenge an incumbent Democrat at a time when we need to take back Congress?
Mm-hmm.
And I say, I totally agree. We need to take back Congress, but we need to take back Congress with a commitment to peace. And we need to take back Congress in a way that will strengthen our party, not undermine it. And when you pander to right-wing militarism, that's what you do. You weaken your party. When I tried to collect signatures, you know, you have to collect signatures to file, and I roamed the streets of Venice, I said, I'm a Democrat. I didn't get much past that. You know, people looked at me stunned. How can you be a Democrat right now? Where are the Democrats?
Right. It's absolutely right. We talk about that a lot. And everybody, you know, every once in a while we have to have these weird celebrations about Russ Feingold because he's like almost the only guy that speaks out on these principles. So let's go through some other issues. Certainly one that's important to the people of California, and now it's become a very charged issue, and it's going to be an election issue in 2006, is immigration and how the Republicans are handling it. It's been my belief that they have just set it up so if a particular precinct is you know, particularly racist or jingoistic, that Republican run on that if they want, and if they're not, they can run the way that Bush wants. Where are the progressive Democrats standing on this issue?
Progressive Democrats, by and large, are questioning the causes of the influx of immigrants into this country, challenging the notion that we need free trade agreements, which are really more like slave trade agreements,
mm-hmm.
where we undermine, in these agreements, we undermine environmental protections as well as protections for working people. And we drive corporations that are seeking maximum profit into countries like China. They don't have to worry about import taxes too much under these trade agreements. And so instead of developing a healthy working force in Mexico, we see the race to the bottom and the establishment of these sweatshops along the Mexican border. Wages are depressed, working conditions are horrendous, and we see an incredible influx into the United States. So let's address the root cause. I mean, we could build a huge wall. We could wall off the United States of America. Why not?
Mm.
Because that's not the answer. That doesn't address the cause.
The cause is global politics and trade agreements.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, how about the environment? Jim and I talk about this constantly, and I think it seems that is going to, it's starting to unfold as a major part of the Democratic platform, thank God, and I think it's a reasonable thing. How come it takes so long for people to finally go, well, we got proof now, let's go ahead and run on this? I mean, the environment is it this election time, isn't it?
Absolutely, and I'm very concerned about global warming. I pledge support for the new Apollo Energy Project, which says that we need to get serious about alternative energy. George Bush, he delivers his State of the Union address, and for a brief nanosecond, he sounds like a green talking about addiction to oil, and it's true. We do have an addiction to oil, but unlike George Bush, progressives want to see a real serious commitment to developing alternative energy, to providing tax incentives to corporations to develop wind power, solar power. And let's take a look at all of these defense contractors. Do we really need 10,000 nuclear warheads?
No.
Do we really need to produce, as George Bush would have us, 125 new nuclear bombs each year? Let's talk peace conversion. How can we look at some of these defense contractors and discuss transferring some of the energy and the investment that we are making into war into alternative energy that would, in fact, create us as a far more independent nation and far less dependent on foreign oil?
Our guest is Marcy Winograd. She is a congressional candidate here in California's 36th district running against another Democrat, if you want to call her that, Jane Harman. Now, let's talk about, now that Alito is in, the assumption is that, you know, Roe v. Wade will probably be overturned. This is going to be a state's issue. How are we to look ahead in terms of reproductive freedom and women's rights around this issue?
I think women everywhere have to mobilize. My opponent says she is pro-choice. I am pro-choice as well. And I think it's imperative that we get out in front on this issue and think about, well, where are we going to be attacked? Look what's happening in South Dakota. It's almost impossible for a woman to have control over her reproductive body in South Dakota. Very mm-hmm. few choices. And so we need to protect the institutions that we have now that offer women a choice. And we need to really look seriously at these abstinence-only programs that narrow the choices for women as they grow up.
Yeah, and those abstinent-only, a lot of those are based in fear, and they try to terrorize people.
And they don't work.
They definitely don't work. It wouldn't have stopped me when I was a teenager. what do you got coming up?
We have some exciting activities coming up tomorrow. That's Tuesday, April 25th, in Los Angeles at 3:30 p.m. Cindy Sheehan We'll be at a rally with Marcy Winograd and the Progressive Democrats of America team roadshow tour. We will be at Mar Vista Park, McLaughlin, and Palms at 3:30 p.m. for an anti-war rally, bring the troops home, and then a precinct walk into Mar Vista. I hope everyone will join us for that. In addition, that night, tomorrow night, Tuesday, we will have a fundraiser for Progressive Democrats in, where is that? Oh, yes, Beverly Hills. Mm. And you can find out more about that at pdamerica.org. Coming up Monday, May 1st at 7 p.m. in San Pedro, the Cabrillo Museum, Scott Ritter, former arms inspector in Iraq, will be appearing with the Winograd for Congress campaign at the Aquarium Theater in San Pedro. The title of that program is Iraq, Iran, and the Constitutional Crisis. People can find out more about these events and contribute at Winograd. Winograd for F-O-R, Congress.com.
Yeah, and that you can link to that from markmaron.com. You know, Scott Ritter and Cindy Sheehan have both been guests on my other show. Great people and really pursuers of truth and great progressive voices, as you are, Marcy Winograd. Thanks for joining
and
us.
Thank you so much, Mark. Great pleasure.
Okay, you take care. We'll be back with some funny, so hang out.
Wow! I can't believe my f***ing ears! Mark's short order news is coming up right after this f***ing break! I'm sailing away. Set an open course for the Marin show. He's got to be free. Free to face a life that's ahead of he. On board, he's the captain. So climb aboard. He'll search for tomorrow. Lord, and he'll try. Oh, Lord, he'll try to carry on.
Man, thanks, man. Thanks a lot, Jim.
Yeah, that's all right, man. You know, it's something I cooked up last night.
I'm going to try to carry on.
Oh, man. You're a very emotional guy, and I know you care. And that's what I wrote it about.
And you're a Secret Sticks fan.
Huh?
Was that Kansas?
I wrote that.
Who was that?
I don't know who that is.
Is that Sticks? Who is that?
It's Sticks.
It is. Man, you must remember. You must have been, like, a senior in high school? When that was, like, everywhere?
Yes, everywhere.
Because I was, probably a freshman or a sophomore, and it was everywhere, song.
I remember in college, in the lunchroom, a girl would bring her portable keyboards and sing Lady.
Oh.
Lady!
Awful. But I know it.
That's right.
It's embedded in there. It's on the permanent tape run.
It's called torture.
I'm going to read a couple more Kerry quotes since this is the day to do it. This is from his speech in support of dissent in Faneuil Hall on Saturday. The true defeatists today are not those who call for recognizing the facts on the ground in Iraq. The true defeatists are those who believe America is so weak that it must sacrifice its principles to the pursuit of illusory power. The true pessimists today are not those who know that America can handle the truth about administration's boastful claim of mission accomplished in Iraq. The true pessimists are those who cannot accept that America's power and prestige depend on our credibility at home and around the world. The true pessimists are those who do not understand that fidelity to our principles is as critical to national security as our military power itself. And the most dangerous defeatists, the most dispiriting pessimists, are those who invoke September 11th to argue that our traditional values are a luxury we can no longer afford. All right, so it would have been good a couple years ago, but it's still good now.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that he's saying it. Tomorrow, and he's right. You know, don't you feel the current changing? Doesn't it have to change? I mean, even though the Bush administration is talking about how the economy is coming back or whatever, who cares if you're going to spend $4 a gallon to fill your damn tank up?
Yeah, and the jobs suck. I'm sorry, but you know, the jobs aren't what they were.
It's an illusion, and it's not working. They're not selling it. Tomorrow, comedian Mort Saul is going to be here. He said he was going to be here before, and now he's going to be here again. It's odd that he had to go to a doctor's appointment when he said he was going to be on the show the last time. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, and I'll ask him tomorrow, that I got my last Letterman appearance because he was sick. I think he was supposed to be on the Letterman show, and I think because he called in sick, I was able to do it. I'm not sure, but I'll ask him about it and see. Like, that's the most important question I got to ask more. So, hey, by the way, I think I owe you a thanks for being old and sick.
You owe your career to him.
No, I don't mean to say old and sick, but he might have felt, no, he's not going to come. Yeah, he'll probably come. He's not up listening because he's older and he's probably sleeping.
Damn it,
I did it again. I don't think he's sick. No, he would come in. From the website talkleft.com, Geraldyn will be with us. She's a one-named blogger. And the director of the new documentary Wordplay, Patrick Creedon, will be here as well. A lot happened in the news today, and we want to make sure you're up to speed and informed. So here's tonight's edition of the Mark Maron Show's Short Order News. His voice sounding strong and combative, Osama bin Laden released another audio tape calling for the creators of cartoons mocking Mohammed to be turned over to Al-Qaeda for punishment. The tape also contained bin Laden demanding the head of the guy that draws family circus. Experts are baffled by the audio tape, wondering how a man can have access to weapons of terror but not have access to a CD burner. CD burner. Didn't think I was going to use that one. It came out of nowhere. A multi-state outbreak of mumps across the Midwest is showing no sign of letting up. Doctors blame the outbreak on ignorance, saying in a recent poll, most people thought the mumps were an indie rock band playing at Coachella. The mumps. I think there was a mumps, actually. A controversial television seance that aired today claimed it reached the spirit of John Lennon, but viewers had to pay $9.95 to find out what the Beatle had to say, and another $9.95 to hear what he really meant by playing it backwards. That's the Mark Maron Show's Short Order News for today. You people out there listening all around the world, some of you streaming, some of you podcasting in the morning, some of you here in Los Angeles listening to KTLK Progressive Talk 1150, you're always welcome to go to markmaron.com and blog, or send your opinions, send an email. I enjoy the emails. I enjoy reading the emails, so we no longer have a call-in option at this point. So, the emails are the way to communicate and get your message out to the people, because I'll read the ones that I find certainly, mean. I'll read those. I'll read the ones that make me angry because you've insulted me somehow. Those are always fun to read. Right, Jim?
Yeah, those are real fun. You know, we should have like an answering machine where we could record people calling in.
That is. We used to have that on Sedition.
Yeah? God, I never listened to that. I mean.
Yeah, we used to be on it, and it was early for you. And, you don't like to, be part of it.
I had work to do.
Yeah, whatever. All right. So, as I said, Mort Saul tomorrow. Unless I said, I'm not going to worry about it. From the website Talk Left, Geraldyn, and Patrick Creedon, director of the documentary Wordplay. I want you people to have a nice Monday night, okay? So I'll talk to you tomorrow, sheeple.